Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is August 11, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about DEX aggregator 1inch raises $2.8 million from Binance Labs, Galaxy Digital and more. Chia Network raises $5 million to rival new crop of DeFi-friendly base layers. India may be starting its biggest Bitcoin bull run yet. Alchemy goes public with developer platform in bid to grow DeFi ecosystem. First mover, after falling 65% this year in Bitcoin terms, do stablecoins need a rebranding? Following the OCC letter, some US banks appear open to providing crypto services. Now let's get started. DEX aggregator 1inch raises $2.8 million from Binance Labs, Galaxy Digital and more. Launched by software engineers from Porsche and Near Protocol, 1inch has raised $2.8 million in a funding round led by Binance Labs. The platform was launched at the ETH Global Hackathon last year as a liquidity aggregator connecting multiple decentralized exchanges, DEXs. This summer, it reported passing the $1 billion threshold in the total volume of tokens going through its smart contracts. Investors in its funding round, announced Tuesday, also included Galaxy Digital, Greenfield One, Libertas Capital, Dragonfly Capital, FTX, IOSG, La UNC Hub Ventures and Divergence Ventures. Loy Liu, founder of Kyber Network, and Ilya Polosukhin, co-founder of Near Protocol, also participated. The startup was founded by its CEO, Sergey Kuntz, a software engineer at German luxury car maker Porsche, and about to leave to go full-time for his crypto projects, and CTO Anton Bukov, a former smart contract developer at Near Blockchain Protocol. 1inch provides swaps between ERC-20 tokens and Ethereum standard, pulling liquidity from exchanges including Uniswap, Kyber, Bancor, Muniswap, also founded by Kuntz and Bukov, and others. When we thought of making an aggregator, there were about five big DEXs on the market, with significant price differences, Bukov told CoinDesk. First, we created a website showing the best prices, but then figured out we need to split orders between different DEXs to get better prices than each one of those DEXs offered. According to market data provider CoinGecko, 1inch is currently facilitating over $20 million in trades daily. And the firm doesn't plan to stop there. There are currently about 17,700 wallets registered on 1inch, according to the startup. The newly announced investment will fuel 1inch's team expansion, it now counts 16 people, new products development and marketing. The project aims to ride the wave of the decentralized finance, or DeFi, gold rush and perhaps even become the first DeFi unicorn out there, Kuntz said. In the coming months, 1inch is planning to release its own token and provide liquidity mining, or yield farming, on Muniswap. DEX aggregation is a critical building block that co-enabled the most recent DeFi boom. It allows executing large order sizes at low slippage rates. 1inch has become the de facto interface for trade execution in DeFi, with aggregate volume surpassing $1 billion, Binance CEO Changpeng Zhao, CZ, said in a statement for 1inch press release. Chia Network raises $5 million to rival new crop of DeFi-friendly base layers. Chia Network, led by BitTorrent creator Bram Cohen with the aim of creating a programmable money platform, just raised another $5 million in an equity round led by Slow Ventures. Despite the resurgence of token sales this summer, Cohen said the plan since 2018 has been to go the IPO route and rely on venture capital until the token launch. Meanwhile, the team is focused on gamifying early-stage contributions to attract a Chia-centric developer community. We've now finished that format, so if you generate plots today and put the resources into building those, they will still work the day Mainnet goes live, Cohen said, describing how the Chia network uses plots of empty computer space instead of proof-of-work mining like Bitcoin. This latest equity round included Collab Crypto, Ideo, and returning investors like Naval Ravikant. The startup has now garnered roughly $16 million in total venture capital since it launched in 2017, according to Cohen, who added the startup will use the funds to grow the team. Layer 1. Gavin McDermott of Ideo said his firm has confidence in this yet-to-be-launched blockchain because Chia creators are early internet pioneers who already achieved significant milestones in terms of public node participation, currently estimated at over 1,430. Jill Carlson of Slow Ventures said she is looking forward to the mainnet launch, scheduled for later this year, even though Layer 1 blockchain projects have largely fallen out of favor within the venture capital community, which are now generally focused on decentralized finance DeFi and decentralized applications DApps. There are a lot of exciting projects happening in those areas as well, Carlson said of DeFi. But we believe that much of the most exciting innovation is still occurring in new and soon-to-launch base protocols. Like many crypto startups in 2020, the Chia team is focused on DeFi applications. Cohen said Chia is poised to capture Ethereum's market share by offering comparable DeFi functionality in 2021, while Ethereum may still struggle to scale. Chia president Gene Hoffman added, "It's as functional as Ethereum. It might force you to do a different way than Ethereum, but there are reasons why." The Chia team aims to make money using traditional business-to-business offerings, even though the technology is being built through a hybrid open-source model. Hoffman said the goal is to get vertical vendors like Paxful or banks interested in these tools and services rather than making a mass market play directly through retail. Hoffman also said he is already exploring opportunities with several prospective clients, including government agencies, for live pilots when the network launches in several months. That market, government agencies, is feeling pressure from the China blockchain initiatives, Hoffman said. Banks are concerned about having to route all their transactions through Manhattan. They too understand they want the positives of an open network that can still use types of decentralized identity. India may be starting its biggest Bitcoin bull run yet. India's crypto trade volumes have soared since the Supreme Court of India lifted banking restrictions for exchanges in March. According to CoinDance's Paxful and local Bitcoin's volume data, India's Bitcoin peer-to-peer trade volume reached an all-time high in July. Siddhartha Dutta, CEO of Marlin, a tech startup in Bangalore, said the recent spike in demand for Bitcoin mirrors Indians' reaction to demonetization in 2016. Back then, some people learned the value of holding Bitcoin, whose issuance is not controlled by any government, when the Indian government recalled a vast percentage of paper currency. The old bills suddenly lost value due to a government decree. The idea that Bitcoin's value is based on market principles, instead of fickle government policies, made it particularly attractive. The price of Bitcoin on ZebPay, an Indian crypto exchange, had surged from $757 to $1,020 in 18 days after demonetization, while the Bitcoin price in the US remained relatively static. For some Indian investors, investing in Bitcoin was a safe option to store their wealth and minimize the uncertainties caused by demonetization and a possible gold ban. India's growing crypto market dramatically slowed in 2018. When the Reserve Bank of India, RBI, ordered financial institutions to avoid working with crypto exchanges. Now, the lifting of banking restrictions appears to have unleashed pent-up demand for cryptocurrency, which no government can declare worthless. These days, Bitcoin activity is ramping up across India on peer-to-peer exchanges such as Paxful and local Bitcoins. As the chart below shows, India's peer-to-peer Bitcoin transaction volumes have doubled over the last 5 months. According to a spokeswoman for Paxful, one of the leading peer-to-peer trading platforms, India is now among the five fastest-growing Bitcoin user groups in the world. Paxful's Indian volume surged from around $576,000 in May 2019 to $8.97 million in July 2020, and the total peer-to-peer Indian volumes on Paxful and local bitcoins reached $13.7 million. Smaller exchanges serving the Indian market, like Delta Exchange, are also seeing rapid growth. Delta Exchange CEO Pankaj Balani said new signups are growing 100% month over month. Dutta believes crypto has also been slowly gaining traction thanks to mesh networks that help provide connectivity and fast streaming in rural areas. This could signal the start of an even bigger adoption cycle. People in India are getting exposed to the internet, mobile first, Dutta said. However, he added, this growth should not be mistaken for mainstream adoption. The bull market, combined with coronavirus travel restrictions, could energize India's startup scene. Bangalore-based entrepreneur Prashant Balasubramanian is the co-founder of the Lightning Wallet startup LastBit. LastBit aims to reach beyond the Indian market to serve Europe and eventually North America. But since 2020 will be a year of relative quarantine, Balasubramanian is thinking it's a good time to build at home. Silicon Valley is a fantastic place for business, but as a young company we're able to function more effectively and keep things lean with a 10x difference in runway by using our Indian roots, he said. Dutta said he expects that cryptocurrency projects will continue to proliferate across India's tech industry during the coronavirus recession. There is certainly potential to grow much more, Dutta said. Alchemy goes public with developer platform in bid to grow DeFi ecosystem. Blockchain infrastructure startup Alchemy, which helps decentralized finance DeFi projects run or access nodes, just launched its full suite of products to the public, after a two-year closed beta serving teams including MakerDAO and Kyber Network. DeFi projects like MakerDAO, 0x and others all use Alchemy solutions to access Ethereum blockchain data, rather than run their own nodes. Alchemy CEO Nikhil Viswanathan said more than 70% of top Ethereum applications and more than $2.8 billion worth of assets locked in DeFi rely on Alchemy for access to blockchain data. We've replaced all the infrastructure providers for most of them, Viswanathan said, referring to hundreds of Ethereum startups that pay for Alchemy's software services. One such user, Dapper Labs CEO Roham Garegoslo, said in a press statement his startup relies on Alchemy for managing infrastructure, plus enterprise-grade tools and support, so the team can focus on shipping code. It appears as though most Ethereum startups use one of three infrastructure providers, if not all three of them. For example, Infura, the rival service provider partially owned by Ethereum co-founder Joe Lubin, offers a similar API service. Bison Trails is the other major player in the Ethereum infrastructure trifecta. Developers pay startups like Infura and Alchemy for access to distant hardware, typically managed by Amazon or Google, and tools to easily use blockchain data. This isn't a don't trust, verify approach, but it does make it easier for startups to focus on serving retail users. Right now, building with blockchain, it's like trying to build a skyscraper with a hammer and a shovel. Alchemy is bringing the construction equipment so it's easier to build things, Viswanathan said. We are a pipe to a decentralized network, there are other pipes and people can use whatever pipes that they want. From his perspective, having a remote-first company with deliberate redundancy offers a type of decentralization, albeit one divorced from Bitcoin's full stack of self-sovereign aspirations. Behind the scenes, Viswanathan said his startup facilitated roughly $7.5 billion worth of on-chain transactions over the last year, from exchanges to loan platforms. That may, in part, be thanks to the fact the startup attracted well-connected investors like Coinbase Ventures, which also invested in Bison Trails. As the de facto standard in blockchain, Alchemy already powers the most sophisticated teams, investor Paul Varadedikit of Pantera Capital said in a press statement. Even after an explosive year of growth, it's not hard to imagine all the teams responsible for the DeFi ecosystem fitting in a single university lecture hall. In fact, both Alchemy co-founders graduated from Stanford University and attracted investment from their alma mater as well. By making some of these services free to the public, Viswanathan said he aims to diversify the DeFi ecosystem. Our mission is to make blockchain development accessible to every developer, Viswanathan said, describing the newly public beta. Now anyone can sign up and use the same tools powering the biggest companies in crypto. First mover, after falling 65% this year in Bitcoin terms, do stablecoins need a rebranding? Imagine a future where Bitcoin has taken over from the US dollar as the world's de facto reserve currency. Assuming Bitcoin's notorious price volatility continued to that day, major currencies would be considered volatile assets. Here's a chart of how foreign exchange rates would have looked over the past few months had the dollar, euro, yen and British pound been denominated in Bitcoin. Such a mental exercise is one of the points highlighted in a recent report on stablecoins by Matt Walsh and Nick Carter of the cryptocurrency investment firm Castle Island Ventures. In the taxonomy of digital assets, stablecoins are a category of tokens whose value is linked to dollars or other major currencies or assets. The idea is that their prices are more stable than those of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. But Walsh and Carter refer to dollar-backed stablecoins as crypto dollars. Stability, in other words, is in the eye of the beholder. Though initially dubbed stablecoins, due to their emergence as a response to volatile native cryptocurrencies, they are increasingly being referred to as crypto dollars, the report reads. Such a rebranding could gain traction as dollar-linked stablecoins grow in popularity, even though they've been a pretty lousy investment option in recent months compared with Bitcoin. As detailed in First Mover last week, every digital asset in the CoinDesk 20 gained in July except for dollar-linked stablecoins, whose prices were, by definition, unchanged in dollar terms. That's partly a reflection of how weak the dollar has been trading in foreign exchange markets lately, which in turn is a reflection of investors' pessimistic views on the dollar's value as the coronavirus-induced recession drags on. The total outstanding amount of these crypto dollars has more than doubled in the past 4 months to about $13 billion, according to Coinmetrics, a cryptocurrency data firm. Crypto traders use the tokens as a form of liquidity, transferring funds easily between digital asset exchanges. The tokens are essentially privately issued digital money, and Castle Island points out that they might someday figure in a global patchwork of crypto dollar issuers. Already, a group of 16 of the dollar-linked stablecoins collectively has a broad monetary base greater than that of 72 countries. There's a growing acceptance of crypto dollars in commerce, according to the report, as well as a recognition that these assets are not merely tokens for inter-exchange settlement but have begun to see usage as non-bank dollar substitutes. Jump Capital, an investment firm, wrote in an op-ed for The Block last week that, at least for now, people want dollars. Despite potential concerns about U.S. monetary policy and debt levels, for billions of people around the world, the U.S. dollar is more stable than their local currency, according to the piece. They predicted that the market value of stablecoins could eventually outstrip that of Bitcoin, currently at $218 billion. We believe U.S. dollar stablecoins, or crypto dollars, may very well end up being the killer app for crypto, the authors wrote. We may very well end up hearing calls for stablecoins not Bitcoin in the same way we heard blockchain not Bitcoin a few years ago. Such an outlook assumes people continue to want stability in dollar terms. After all, prices for the oldest and largest cryptocurrency are up 65% this year against the dollar. Which means those crypto dollars are down 65% this year, in Bitcoin terms. Trend: Bitcoin's rally looks to be on pause after the bulls failed to keep gains above the $12,000 mark on Monday. The leading cryptocurrency is currently trading near $11,760, representing a 1.3% decline on the day. Buyers pushed prices to a high of $12,070 on Monday, but the breakout was again short-lived and prices printed a UTC close below $11,800. Bitcoin's failure to establish a foothold above the psychological $12,000 hurdle validates uptrend exhaustion signaled by lower highs on the daily chart MACD histogram, an indicator used to identify trend changes and trend strength. Further, the 10-day moving average is no longer sloping upwards, also a sign of ebbing of bullish momentum. As such, some chart-driven traders may start to sell, yielding a deeper pullback. Immediate support is located near $11,670 at the ascending trendline on the 4-hour chart. A breach there would expose the higher low of $11,219 created on the 4-hour chart on August 7. However, if the ascending trendline holds firm, a bounce to $12,000 may be seen. That said, the greater short-term pressure may be to the downside, as gold has fallen back below $2,000 per ounce. Bitcoin generally rallied in tandem with gold in the second half of July. Following the OCC letter, some U.S. banks appear open to providing crypto services. Major U.S. banks might be willing to support cryptocurrency services with just a bit of additional guidance from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC, their federal regulator. Multiple national banks responded to the OCC's June Advance Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, ANPR, which asked the general public to weigh in before August 3rd on how cryptocurrencies and other fintech tools might be used in the financial sector. Notably, several banks, including U.S. Bank and PNC, indicated they might be interested in actually providing crypto custody and other services to customers. The responses by just under a dozen banks, among a total of 89 submissions from think tanks, policy advocates, crypto startups and other entities, represent one of the strongest signs yet that traditional financial institutions view the still nascent crypto space as a legitimate asset class. The responses contrast sharply with an open letter sent to Acting Comptroller of the Currency Brian Brooks. The letter, which opposed a narrow payments charter for fintech companies, was signed by many of the same respondents and sent to the OCC on July 29. Fresh guidance from the OCC may help provide the necessary legal comfort for banks to provide crypto-native analogs to traditional bank services, wrote Juan Soares, Coinbase's vice president and general counsel for enterprise. Although these services, such as borrowing, lending and remittances, are permissible activities for national banks, there remains some uncertainty as to whether the provision of these services using cryptocurrencies is authorized, he said. Peter Najarian, chief revenue officer at BitGo, told CoinDesk the ANPR's very existence is exciting, as it's a frankly inevitable step in the maturing of this ecosystem. Clarifying treatment. Dominic Venturo, chief digital officer at U.S. Bank National Association, perhaps went the furthest in his response, writing that the OCC and other banking regulators should issue guidance around the cryptocurrency market as well as the expectations for services conducted on distributed ledger technology. A lack of clear regulations might result in both banks and customers being unwilling to invest or use cryptocurrencies and similar digital assets, he wrote, with customers potentially being interested in investing in crypto, funding traditional financial products, using cryptos as payments, tokenizing physical assets. U.S. Bank does not have a position on the role that cryptocurrency should undertake in the financial services sector, but merely seeks additional regulatory clarity to service the cryptocurrency market as it is currently structured or may be structured in the future, he wrote. The OCC should work with the other federal regulators to clarify how cryptocurrencies and digital assets are treated, Venturo wrote. Specifically, he suggested the OCC differentiate between utility tokens, stablecoins and exchange tokens, clarify the requirements for providing custody services, cross-border restrictions, and the extent consensus rules must be a part of a transaction. PNC Bank's head of technology and innovation, Stephen Van Wyk, commented that the OCC should continue to reinforce that national banks should take a risk-based approach in reviewing new products, but should not have risk elimination as the ultimate goal. All banking activities, including deposit taking and lending, involve risk, and the implementation of new technologies necessarily will involve some degree of risk, Van Wyk wrote. A supervision framework that is focused only on preventing risk will, almost by necessity, prevent responsible innovation and the implementation of new technologies by national banks. User protections. Financial institutions and OCC rulemaking should have some focus on consumer protections, several of the responses indicated. Banks might even need to be encouraged to use privacy-enhancing cryptocurrency technologies, wrote Peter van Valkenburg, Coin Center's director of research. He said banks are obligated to both protect their customers' privacy as well as surveil and report activities that may break the law. In his view, they can do this effectively with privacy coins and other tools. Banks can conduct know-your-customer checks and otherwise identify their users to comply with relevant laws before providing privacy services by using mixers or other tools to facilitate crypto transactions. They should perform heightened due diligence on any payments their customers initiate or receive if either the amounts involved are substantial or a suspicious pattern of behavior has emerged with respect to several smaller transactions, van Valkenburg wrote. Tina Wu, Senior Managing Counsel for Regulatory Affairs at MasterCard, also suggested consumer protection rules by the OCC would be helpful, addressing both security and privacy concerns. The OCC should develop criteria for which types of cryptocurrencies in which banks may transact, she wrote, which address core network principles including protecting consumers and preventing money laundering or terrorist financing. We believe cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology hold the potential to enhance operational resiliency, improve auditability, and enable new functionalities, she wrote. Based on confidence, not all submissions were positive. Some expressed concern about relaxing regulations. Cornell Law School professor Dan Ourie, Wharton Financial Institutions Center Senior Fellow James McAndrews and Columbia Law School Academic Fellow and Lecturer Lev Menand wrote the OCC's ANPR has two major flaws, an excessive focus on finding ways to relax existing rules and its narrow focus in updating the regulatory framework for national banks and savings associations. Menand is an advocate for a digital dollar structure, and supported efforts to introduce a digital dollar in multiple congressional bills earlier this year. Money and payment systems are based on confidence, the three wrote. In the case of the national banking system, this confidence stems from highly sophisticated regulatory frameworks that govern national banks. These regulatory frameworks include federal deposit insurance, access to central bank liquidity support and a special resolution regime. In other words, individuals trust banks because of a strict regulatory regime that lets them deposit their funds secure in the knowledge their money is safeguarded. The second flaw relates to the existing legal structure surrounding banks and savings associations, they wrote. The ANPR notes that many new financial technologies exist because newly created institutions and platforms try to perform banking functions but aren't regulated like traditional banks. The OCC should consider whether it makes more sense to strengthen regulations around non-bank financial institutions, which the letter refers to as shadow payment systems. New financial technology firms that sprung up in recent years, including stablecoin issuers and companies like PayPal, operate in a murky regulatory environment that requires far fewer protections than banks face. To resolve these concerns, the three said Congress could pass new laws requiring these startups hold insured deposits and deposits at commercial banks. Stablecoin issuers could be required to maintain either the sum total of U.S. dollars or the U.S. dollar equivalent of issued tokens at a bank. The OCC should recommend that Congress enact new legislation to address the shortcomings in our existing regulatory framework. Such legislation can be quite simple, they wrote. Third-party help. Banks don't necessarily have to provide crypto services directly. BitGo, which has offered custody services for over a year, believes that banks should be able to tap sub-custodians to provide these services, Nigerian said. This would relieve banks of the technological and resource burden that would come of having to directly build out their own services. Miller Whitehouse Levine at the Blockchain Association told CoinDesk he agreed. The industry organization recommended letting third parties provide certain services for banks in its own response, he said. The OCC permits banks to engage third parties to conduct what they consider to be critical bank activities, he told CoinDesk. Visa Vice President for Global Regulatory Affairs Ki Tran Trong wrote that the payment rail wants to be an intermediary for cryptocurrencies and its 61 million merchants. Our objective is to enable digital currency users to spend from their digital currency balance using a Visa debit or prepaid credential anywhere Visa is accepted, Tran Trong said in the letter. R3, another third-party service provider, touted its integrations with SWIFT, NASDAQ and Deutsche Börse Group, noting these partnerships have allowed participants in financial transactions to monitor these transactions more efficiently than traditional tools provided for. In particular, NASDAQ has launched a platform tapping R3 to help manage issuance and other services, wrote Isabel Corbett, R3's global head of government relations. Ongoing dialogue. Kristen Baggiano, founder of the Digital Asset Regulatory and Legal Alliance and co-founder of trading platform Crosstower, told CoinDesk the OCC is in its initial stage of rulemaking, meaning this is the best time for the industry to express its concerns and make suggestions to the agency. Once the broad policy has been etched, market participants and regulators will move to proposed rulemaking, she said through a spokesperson. At that stage, the ability to engage in dialogue about policy and the broad framework becomes more difficult. Thus, this is a critical time for market participants and regulators to jointly develop a framework in which all stakeholders are comfortable. A wide range of industry participants appear to agree. Novi, the rebranded Facebook subsidiary Calibra, Consensus, Celo, Axos Bank, the American Bankers Association, Figure Technologies, Chamber of Digital Commerce, Silvergate Bank, Ripple Labs and other respondents all supported the idea that banks and savings institutions can safely handle crypto-related services with the right amount of regulation. The Blockchain Association's Kristen Smith told CoinDesk it is important, as a first step, for any entity that has a stake in the crypto industry to ensure it weighs in with the OCC. Visa's Tran Trong summed up his hope for the OCC's ultimate rulemaking process by calling for new regulation that still allows for innovation. We recognize that enterprise adoption of blockchain technology can improve several core functions in financial services by providing tamper-evident and tamper-resistant digital ledgers. However, absent further innovations, inherent challenges with respect to improving scalability, security and device usage, can limit consumer adoption and fail to meet regulatory standards, he wrote. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.